Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton, and this is everything you never knew you wanted to know from the bottom of the junk drawer. Facts and topics that are a little bit too short for a whole episode, but are nevertheless delightful. For instance, did you know that a platypus nursery is called a platypusary? Boy. That was wonderful, and I was so excited to share it with you. Henry Burrell, Australian naturalist, who was born in 1873, coined that term.
You could make so many. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Should we go turn a corner before we go too far down that road?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we could talk about blue honey.
We could. Yes. Okay.
Okay. So all of my topics today come from CNEN News. Chaz is an American Chemical Society member, has been for years. Uh-huh. It's one of those things where it's like, are you a graduate student? Do you want to be a member of a society? So we've been paying dues for a really long time. So it's finally paying off today.
Yes.
Stuff I've found at the back of the magazine. So okay. This is blue honey.
Literally blue?
If someone melted down like a purple candy.
Like you're wondering if somebody, this is a crayon that got left in the dashboard too long? Or is it still translucent or clear?
It's got that gritty honey look to it, and it's kind of this deep purpley blue. If you look up blue honey while I talk, you'll get to see it. So okay. Every 3 to 5 years, beekeepers and state apiary inspectors like Shirley Harris, they have this weird thing happening in their North Carolina hives, blue and purple honey. And it's not, okay, so we've had bees rummaging in a French M&M factory garbage, and they made like bright colored honey, you know, and it does. It looks like a pride flag threw up in a beehive, but that's not this.
Awesome.
And it's not bees slurping up maraschino cherry syrup, making like blood red. It's not that. It's actually, they think it might be natural.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a picture of honeycomb where they've got the yellow, that golden honeycomb texture and the blue honey in it. And it is wild. It's very jewel tone and beautiful.
Yeah. It's so pretty. Well, they think it might be from drinking from sourwood tree blossoms. Mm-hmm. So sourwood tree, it's not the favorite of bees, but in very dry years, you're going to take what flowers you can get, right? You know, you're hungry. Yeah. You're going to eat that stale, crusty sandwich. They're going to drink out of those flowers. They think that maybe it's the same kind of chemistry that happens with hydrangeas. So if you see the hydrangea flowers, sometimes they're pink, sometimes they're blue.
Yeah.
The more acidic, the more blue it is. Well, it might be that the digestive juices in the bee's tummy is turning the honey blue because it has compounds in it that react with the acid in the bee's stomach.
That makes sense because we eat foods that affect our output. It's usually urine for us, but
that's true. eat too many beets, think you're bleeding to death. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's delightful. Yeah. So do they sell it or are they like, oh, no, this is not for...
Oh, no, they totally sell it. You can buy North Carolina blue honey. And I imagine there's some people out there that are just adding a little coloring. But no, you can buy it. It doesn't happen very often. Some scientists have said, well, maybe it's kudzu, maybe it's fungal infections. Mm-hmm. But main consensus is it's that sourwood tree. And it turns out that 2023 has been a really dry year. So
they might have some.
Yep. See, it's so cool, but it's too short to talk about for, I mean, we could just be like, bees are amazing for 15 minutes, but no.
Yeah, they are. Would you like to transition to Stoic philosophers? We're going to really turn a corner here.
Okay, left turn. I'm ready.
So just as a reminder, the Stoics believed that the practice of virtue is enough to achieve eudaimonia, which is a well-lived, flourishing life. So the path to achieving that life is spent practicing virtues such as courage and temperance and living in accordance with nature. So Chrysippus was a Stoic philosopher. He became the third head of the Stoic school around 230 BC, so a very long time ago. And he was very into logic and the theory of knowledge and ethics and physics. This is his life he lived. The story of Chrysippus comes to us from Diogenes Laertius, the biographer and also philosopher. He tells the story, Chrysippus may have died from laughing at his own joke. I'm completely enchanted by a man who has lived his life for temperance and living in accord with nature. Because Diogenes says that there's two possibilities, two different accounts of his death. And the first is that Chrysippus was seized with dizziness, having drunk undiluted wine at a feast and died soon after.
Okay.
Or he was watching a donkey eat some figs and cried out, "Now give the donkey a drink of pure wine to wash down the figs," and died in a fit of laughter.
Feels almost like it's the first Grecian dad joke. Like he says the thing, slaps his thigh, snorts, and then just boof off his chair.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't hate that.
No, I feel like his detractors probably came up with the second one.
Died from his own joke. Oh, that's sad. You know how he could have died? He could have died from an assassin's teapot.
An assassin's teapot is a very unexpected assassin weapon.
It is. And it's one of those myths that I... and not myths that I kind of adore, because if you look up Assassin's Teapot, you find a lot of fake history surrounding what is kind of a cool invention. Mm-hmm. Like if you type in Assassin's Teapot, you see this green pottery teapot of a stereotypical old Chinese man, like leaning on what looks like a marker of some kind with some Chinese characters. It is the worst, literally the worst. Mm-hmm. But the story goes that teapot is an ancient Chinese weapon of murder, and that there's even one in the Smithsonian, which there is not.
Oh, that's disappointing, but I like the lore.
Yeah. Oh, so much lore. So many layers, website after website. So the design is cool. So I've got a YouTube in the show notes. It's this guy named Steve Mould, and he makes a 2D replica of what's going on inside the teapot. It's a pretty good watch. This teapot has two chambers inside, side by side. If you cut the teapot in half, spout to handle, so each side has part of the spout, and each side has part of the body, and each side has part of the handle.
Yeah.
There's two chambers. One side you have tea, the other side you have poisoned tea. And then by placing your thumb on these two discrete little holes on the handle.
Yeah.
So you're creating pressure. You can pour from one or the other.
Okay, go to the show notes, you guys, and look at this, because it will make complete sense when you look at a diagram. I'm looking at somebody's YouTube, and they've got a cross section where blue on top, green on the bottom, and blue is pouring because of where his hand is. This makes, like, there's some magicians that do this whole pouring into an empty cup from a thing. And you're like, how did he do it?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Somebody did an example with colored water. So they poured one that was yellow and then one that was blue. And then they poured a next and the third cup and they pour green because it mixes the blue and the yellow because they don't have their finger on either hole. So both pour at the same time.
Yes.
So as a concept, pour the unpoisoned tea first.
Yeah.
And then pour the poisoned tea second. I've also seen people who use the teapot and one side has tea and one side has milk. The comments on that one were almost apocalyptic and World War III in nature. They were like, the milk would get hot, the tea would get cold. So
if it was my grandpa, you would all get tea and he'd get a little dram of whiskey.
It's all brown. It all looks like tea.
Yep.
Yeah. So cute teapot, cute idea. It is vastly disputed as to it being a Chinese assassin's teapot. So you couldn't see those air quotes, but I did them next to the microphone. Yeah.
Yes, I can. This is now like the fun thing where you dazzle the grandkids, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is very clever. I like that.
Me too.
Yeah. And you're right about the one that shows up most in posts is very problematic and stereotypical looking. And you can buy them on Amazon or eBay. But there are some other designs where people have been clever. Interesting. That's fun.
Brain Junk does not condone the use of Assassin's Teapot to kill your neighbor. Don't do that.
No, for sure. No, but if you have like, this is the good stuff and I'm not sharing it with you, by all means... We encourage a little bit of living your best life through hoarding your good resources.
Little tomfoolery. Yeah. So that's all I got on teapots.
That's fun. Okay. As long as we're on beverages, would you like to talk about the 2013 discovery of the oldest undisturbed water cache ever in Canada?
Oh, did somebody drink it? I just, ugh. Yes! So, ew.
Dr. Barbara Sherwood Lawler. She's like, how could you not? And I kind of get it. But she said it was salty and viscous and turns kind of orangey when exposed to air. I'm like, oh, so gross.
Oh, man. That is like some old, old seawater. Old.
Can you imagine? It probably immediately began rotting, hence that viscosity and the orangey as soon as it was exposed to air.
Oh, the bacteria. Yeah. Why? Wow.
I know. Well, but most of the live bacteria, wouldn't you? Well, I don't know. I didn't read too far because I was just enchanted with the idea that there is a person out there who absolutely took a lot of dares when they were younger and has also probably eaten a lot of other weird stuff. Do you want to know another one about things, another beverage one? Uh-huh. A headline caught my attention. People can die from drinking soy sauce, which I immediately kind of believed because salt can disrupt your, you need to have a balance of salinity in your body. You can't have too much. You need a little, you need some. And indeed, you can overdose from salt. So a salt dose ranging from 0.75 grams to 3 grams per kilogram of body weight can kill someone. Here's the math.
Thank you. Because I was like 3 grams per kilogram. So if it's like a 100-pound person.
Yeah. 1 kilogram is 2.2 pounds. So okay. Let's assume 150-pound person. So let's say you ingest the max, that 0.10 times that 2.2 pounds, 150-pound person would only need to ingest 15 ounces of sodium. I say only, but that's a lot. Can you imagine?
15 ounces is a whole, like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of salt.
But I wonder, I didn't look up how much the percentage of sodium to liquid in soy sauce. You'd have to drink quite a bit, but you could do it.
Well, 15 ounces is almost 2 cups.
Yeah. It's a, I've got a 20 ounce bottle in front of me. Isn't that like a can of pop now? No, those are 12 ounces. It's not that much. You could drink 15 ounces, but once it's diluted by liquid, that would be so gross, but you could do it. So don't, please, please don't. And then on the same topic, I'm like, what else can kill you from eating too much? Brazil nuts can cause selenosis, which is an overdose of the mineral selenium.
Yeah, and that only takes like 3 or 4. That just kills me. Because one day Chaz was on a Brazil nut kick because they were in like the Costco nut mix and he was picking them out. And I was like, if you keep going, you're going to die.
Yeah, your hair is going to fall out. Your garlicky breath is going to, garlic breath is weird. Brittle hair or nails, discolored teeth, nervous system issues. It's bad news. So be judicious about Brazil nut consumption, even though they do not match the size of the other nuts. And so it is tempting to eat them first.
I think they're kind of waxy. So they're not my favorite thing.
They're not my favorite flavor, but I find the texture satisfying. It's got a nice crunch.
I pick them out and I hold them out to Chaz, like the Wicked Witch with her apple to Snow White.
Ah, yes.
Would you like a Brazil nut? And he usually eats it.
Awesome. Nutmeg can kill you. Myristicin, which leads to myristicin poisoning. But you'd have to eat multiple tablespoons. So again, it would take a really high level of commitment, but you'd get dizzy and nauseous and headachy and have hallucinations. We all know about green potatoes, right? Don't eat green potatoes.
Yeah. Can you? And it's not just like you can't just peel it, not eat the whole potato.
The whole thing has solanine, which is a natural pesticide. So don't eat them. However, a 100-pound adult would have to eat like a full pound before they started showing symptoms. So it wouldn't even kill them. They'd just be really sorry they ate that much and they'd be sick because of it.
See, and you know, I remember when I found this out as an adult, because I remember as a kid, like if we got potato chips, there was like one with that green band around the edge because it had, you know, been a green. I picked those out because I thought they were special.
Oh! You're low-key slowly poisoning the family.
These are the special ones, and I'd pick them out. And then I found out that I was like, oh, no.
Here, would you like this beautiful one?
It's only a little poisonous.
Yeah. So that was my rambling road.
I'm going to catch that ball and then I'm going to move to scientific sleuthing and trees.
Okay.
So this one, when I saw this, I have been sitting on this article for months, I tell you. If you have a thing that's too young to carbon date and it's made out of wood,
yeah,
you can use something called dendrochronology. So you can count the tree rings. Well, okay, so this is so cool. So cool. Stradivari, the guy who's famous for making violins, violas, cellos.
Yes.
Did you know about harps? Did you know he also made harps?
No, those are such a different construction.
I know, with that swoopy,
of course,
bendy.
The goal to make a beautiful sounding string is the same.
I'm like you. I feel like it's kind of in a different family, but it's also bending wood to the extreme. So
yeah.
I knew about the $3.5 million cello that Yo-Yo Ma left in his New York City taxi that one time, but
yeah,
but not the harp. So we all know he made instruments, but musical historians have wondered where he learned how to make his famous instruments. And it's been thought maybe it was probably with this fellow, Nicola Amati. And he had a workshop, and there's only one violin from 1666 that has a tag in it indicating that it was made by Stradivari in Amati's workshop. But that's it.
Hmm.
So they've been looking for more proof. People have been writing grants. They've been trying to figure things out.
That's not a lot of evidence.
No, there's nothing at all. And it's a long time ago, right? It's just, you know, so. But a study led by Burnaby Mauro looked at the wood grain on a harp that they knew Stradivari had made in 1681. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then they this is like Sherlock Holmes level stuff. They compared the grain in the long, you know, the long back part of the harp that leans against the musician. They compared the wood grain in that to other instruments made about the same time and from the same region. And they found a cello made by Amati in 1679. So a couple years before Stradivari made his harp.
Mm-hmm.
The wood came from the same spruce tree.
Oh, those nerdy instrument people looking all that up and figuring it out. I love them.
Right?
That's so good.
So, and here's the mind bender for me. That tree is estimated to have been cut down in 1624. So 55 years before Amati used it for his cello.
Wow, that's a lot of curing time.
Right. And then 57 years before Stradivari made his harp.
Who would have thought that and figured that? I just love, would never have gone down that road, but a determined historian will find a way.
Yes. Wow. But I just think about the fact that that tree was drying for years, cut in, you know, probably cut into slabs, or maybe it was the whole log and it was sitting there. And then one day this fellow was like, okay, I'm going to make a cello, and he uses some of the wood, but then they saved it. It was just sitting there waiting for somebody else to come through and go, you know what I could make with this? A harp.
I don't think that creators throw a lot out. You know, you've seen the workshops where there's the big logs, and then there's the medium pieces, and then there's the tiny pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially because this wood, boy, did I read a lot of, because they in the article, they talked about, there were two articles, one talking about the figuring out whose workshop it was made in. And then another one was all about, it got into the nuts and bolts of the moisture in the wood and how it changed the sound and the tone and how they were very, I mean, I'm just imagining somebody just, I mean, I know how I am when I go to Home Depot and I'm in the wood section and I'm like touching all the board.
Does that look a little warped? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I can only imagine a skilled craftsman.
Yes. And I can imagine at the time where the mentor is like, yeah, why don't you go pick something off the junk pile and take a crack at it?
Yes. Well, those are all the things I have. Do you have anything else?
I have more. Would you like to talk about, I had a lot of aquatic things today, actually, or water related. Would you like to talk about the dark underside of osmoregulation?
Oh, well, I mean, who doesn't? That comes up at the water cooler all the time.
I know. So let's go back to high school and remember that osmosis is diffusion through water. So you need liquid for osmosis. So next time somebody says, I'm learning through osmosis, I feel like you can give them a swirly.
Throw a cup of water in their face. There you go, buddy.
Yeah. So osmoregulation is important and great. It keeps our salinity levels in our body in the sweet spot. And like, it's fun when you do an experiment where you, I've seen it with an egg because the egg has membranes and it can demonstrate how solutions of different levels of salinity will equalize and how it moves through the cell membrane and that.
Right.
However, this osmoregulation allows bull sharks to travel back and forth between saltwater and freshwater. So they can turn up in lakes, everybody. That's my bad news for you.
We thought cocaine sharks were bad in the ocean.
Yes. But they can also be bad in Lake Nicaragua, which is one of the largest freshwater lakes in the Americas. Bull sharks can travel up the San Juan River through a series of eight rapids like a salmon to reach that lake where they stay for a few years. There are other locations. There's at least one more where they lived for a couple years and were rescued in Australia near the Carbrook Golf Club in Queensland. They were trapped.
Okay.
About six bull sharks were trapped in a freshwater lake on the golf course, and they were relocated after about 2 years. Extreme flooding after Hurricane Ida allowed that one to happen. I don't think normally they can get that far.
7 to 11.5 feet.
That's a significant size. That's like a Shaquille O'Neal. The small ones are a Shaquille O'Neal.
I'm just imagining you're on your floaty in the lake. You're thinking it's all good because it's a lake.
You're lying to your kid about, no, there are no sharks. What you really need to say is there are no hammerheads and there are no tiger sharks here.
Oh, and then a fin breaks the surface. Da-da. Yikes.
Yeah. Do you want to end with one silly, delightful one?
Oh, absolutely.
This one comes from a Twitter post in 2018 where a guy in a bar is talking to a fellow who says that he works at the Edinburgh Zoo and that every time a plane flies over the zoo, the penguins can't resist but look at it. And so they're looking way up and they tip over. And it's this guy's job as the penguin erector to stand the penguins up all day long. Apparently, at that time, they had 38 penguins and 2,000 flights a day.
Is that for real?
The Edinburgh Zoo finally had to respond and say, that is not a job that we have, and the penguins can't see the planes from the zoo.
I'm like, come on, in the wild, you can't just have them falling over and being stuck, penguin erector. Oh my God.
Right? And that's another thing they say. They're like, any clumsy penguin behavior tends to be unrelated to aircraft. And fortunately, penguins have evolved to pick themselves up. So they say they usually try not to crush the internet's hopes and dreams, but they had to debunk that rumor so that they'd stop getting inquiries about applications.
People are like, I want to come and just stand penguins up all day long, like little broken chess pieces. Just stand them up.
But it was something like 70,000 times a week or a day or something. I haven't done the math. I saw somewhere in one note that would be how many. Like, you'd have some amazing quads.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's not real.
Yay for that not being real. But also, but also boo for it not being real. I'm torn, you know?
It's such a good bar story. A tall tale for the bar.
Oh, that is good. See, and if everybody was drunk.
Oh, I'd buy that if I was drunk. I'd be like, and you're like, hey,
hey, there's this penguin.
Hey, you guys, I just met this guy.
He's a wait, shh, penguin erector.
So that's the high note that we're going to leave you on today, brain junkies.
That's some good stuff. See, I like stuff in the junk drawer. You know,
me
I like
too.
Little bibs and bobs. I went and I had a, it's giving me a blinking light. You're almost out of time. Too bad. I went to this doctor's appointment for, you know, like routine stuff. And the gal asked what I did. And I was, you know, freelancer. And I was talking about brain junk. And she was like, oh, so you're really good at trivia night? Well, if the trivia is about how far ants can walk when you cut them off at the knees, then yes, I am your girl.
People don't seem to wander down the roads that we do, but...
Yeah, and she just looked at me, blink, blink. Oh, that sounds charming, huh?
Like, we just have moments of brilliance, like, twice a year at trivia.
Yeah. And then they asked me sports stuff.
Yeah. What shape is that ball?
Yeah. So I think I'm going to outro. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Hope you're sitting down because it's going to be something. Thank you for your reviews and your comments. We read all of them. We love them. If you have some random facts, Facebook, you can message us, brainjugpodcast@gmail.com. Write us an email. I look at it every day. If there's nothing there, I get sad. You don't want that. You know, like, subscribe, follow. You get this quality content. How could you not? Amy and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored.